Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, June 14th. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. You sign up over at betdsi.eu using that promo code BANG200. You'll get 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box. As you know, if you've got those Monday mailbag questions for me for that show coming up in a few days, you can reach out to me on Twitter at Skating Tripods or email me, adam@bangthebook.com. Don't forget about my picks and tips piece, which you can read every day over at the website. We've also got a ton of other content going on. The World Cup, of course, starting here on Thursday, the first game, Russia and Saudi Arabia, already going on as I'm recording the show here today. But we've got group previews, team previews, odds, golden boot odds, articles about experience and the levels of experience that the teams have. We've got all that stuff for you in that comprehensive wall-to-wall preview page over at bangthebook.com for the World Cup. You can also get picks and predictions on all the games. All 32 NFL season win totals have been posted as well, so make sure you check that out. No NASCAR, or no Monster Energy NASCAR this week. We do have Xfinity Series. We've got a preview from Corey Tucker of that. Obviously, the U.S. Open going on as well. So, you know, we cover all the golf stuff on a weekly basis at the website. So much going on. Lots of great content. Make sure you check it out and support all of our writers. Speaking of supporting people associated with the site, Maddie from footballcontest.com, once again, going to be running our proxy service here for the Super Contest this year. We're going to have a couple of entries in the traditional, an entry in the gold, and we'll also have an entry in the Gold Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. So we're going to be very busy here with the football contests that are going on this year. So Maddie will be handling our picks for us. Again, if you don't live in the state of Nevada, you have to sign up in person, first of all, for all of these contests. And you also have to employ the services of a proxy. Maddie does a fantastic job with that. If you need more information, check that out over at footballcontest.com. Speaking of contests, we've got a bunch going on over at bangthebook.com. Our daily streaker, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won, cash prizes available for those contests. You sign up with an email address, we shoot you our daily newsletter, but then you gain entry and access to those contests and give yourself a chance to pick up some cash prizes. We're going to be assigning college football season win totals to our collection of writers here probably sometime next week. So we're going to really get started with those. My plan, my vision, and I don't see why I would fall short of this, is to preview all 129 FBS teams at bangthebook.com. So if you're looking to get excited about college football season, if you're looking to get some of that information taken care of, use those season win total previews to your advantage at the website. Those will be coming out sporadically over the next 4 or 5 weeks or so. But like I said, we intend to have every team covered for the upcoming college football season. Regular format here with this Thursday edition of the Bettors Box. We'll be on the box score, and I'll give out my exit velocity weekly update. Then we'll go down the lines. I'll give you a pick for tonight's action, then what I'm looking at here for the weekend ahead. But before I do that, a couple of things I want to address here at the top of the show. And you know, there's been a lot of talk recently with the suicide of Kate Spade and the suicide of Anthony Bourdain. About mental health and about, you know, the hardships that come along with it. You know, when you think about somebody like Kate Spade, my wife is a big fan of her handbags and, you know, bright colors. Obviously, she hasn't had a whole lot to do with the business side over the last decade or so. But, you know, somebody who was a visionary in terms of creating bright things that people wanted to buy. You think about Anthony Bourdain, a guy who had a lot of money, had a lot of experiences, had a lot of, you know, friends and people that he interacted with, and yet it still wasn't enough for him. And you also think back to somebody like Robin Williams, you know, somebody obviously with a spectacular career in the entertainment industry, made a lot of people laugh in comedic settings, but again, still not enough for all of these people. So, you know, it sort of hits home sometimes when you see people that have a lot of means, have a large support system, have a lot of friends and acquaintances and all this, and, you know, to see that their mental health demons are still too much for them. You know, it's kind of a sobering reminder of how hard it is and how much of a daily struggle it is for people that do have, you know, some of those ongoing issues. And, you know, for me, I've talked about this before here on the show. I've been very open about this and, you know, on things like the Bell Let's Talk Day, I try to mention it on the show as much as I can. But, you know, I got help a few years ago, and it was something that has really changed my life for the better. I mean, over the last, you know, 18 months or so, I've been in a better place than I had been at any other point in my life. And, you know, it was something that was hard for me, you know, to go and realize that, you know, I needed to talk to somebody in a professional capacity. And friends can be a great help. Family can be a great help. But also those people already know a lot about you. They know who you are. Sometimes they know some of the things that you've been going through. Sometimes talking to an impartial third party, so to speak, a professional who can help you with some of these problems that you have, it is something that can absolutely change your life. So if anybody out there is having problems, you know, with your mental health, whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's something else, I certainly encourage you to go out and get the assistance that you need. There are a lot of programs available out there, and I do understand that sometimes it can be very costly, which is, you know, a big reason why a lot of people don't go out and get help, is because a lot of those sessions or medications, if you need them, can be very expensive. But do what you can within your means to address some of those issues that are ongoing. And, you know, well, like I said, I mean, I'm proof positive that it works, and there are a lot of other people I know that are proof positive that it works. And of course, for some people, it doesn't work, but you have to go out there and try and see if you can improve your quality of life. It will improve so many things for you. It's done a lot for me. It's done a lot for people I know that have also gotten assistance. So I just wanted to take a minute to mention that here on today's show. If you are somebody that is having a little bit of a rough time, you know, find an ear that will listen to you. And you can always reach out to me as well, adam@bangthebook.com, if you need any help with anything. A couple of days ago on Tuesday, posted about a fundraiser in the area here for the Caleb Andrew Longfield Foundation. That's a foundation that helps parents that have endured the birth of a stillborn child. It helps them with their medical bills. And, you know, obviously I know a lot of our listeners don't live in the area, and certainly it was tough for you to make it out to that fundraiser. But, you know, I did have a listener who reached out and said that he made a small donation to the foundation, you know, and sent along his well wishes. And, you know, it is amazing to me the people that you can just meet by coincidence, by happenstance, just completely at random through some of the things that you do. And, you know, I know that we've got a very loyal listener base here. I know that we've got a lot of people that are listeners that have become friends or acquaintances or even coworkers of mine with bangthebook.com in a writing capacity. And to know that there are people out there that, you know, have met me through something like this, and then are willing to donate to a cause that, you know, they previously didn't know anything about, obviously have had no interactions with the family, it means so much to me. And, you know, I'm not going to name names here. And, you know, I certainly didn't expect anybody to make any kind of donation or show up at the fundraiser. I just wanted to throw it out there. And, you know, obviously creating awareness is helpful wherever you can. But it actually got me choked up to know that that's the caliber of people that this show has attracted. It means everything to me. And, you know, we could have gone a different route with Bang the Book Radio. We could have gone a different route with this show. But, you know, the vision that I had for this was to have this community type of feel with the show, where we're out there with the same goal, with the same purpose. And, you know, the way that I try to do that here on the show is to educate and inform our listeners with some different betting topics, different ways of looking at things, stuff like that. And I think that we've got the right kind of people listening to this show, the people that understand the industry, that understand what we're trying to do, but overall are just a good group of people. You know, I have not come across anybody that listens to this show who is an asshole. And that means everything to me to know that, you know, that's the kind of listenership that we've got. So, you know, to the listener that donated, I cannot thank you enough. Like I said, I got a little bit choked up about it. I'm getting a little bit emotional about it here, talking about it on today's show as well. But, you know, just absolutely fantastic to know that, you know, that those are some of the people that are out there. And, you know, it makes this a lot easier for me to do. You know, there are some days where I just don't want to embrace the baseball grind, but I know that I've got people, you know, looking at me to help them out with a lot of the different things in the world of Major League Baseball and then across all the other sports as well. And, you know, to know that we've got a very high level of people that listen to this show and frequent our website, it's very much appreciated. And thank you so much to everybody for listening, for reading, for reaching out, for interacting, everything that you do on a day-to-day and week-to-week basis. One other thing I want to mention here, a little bit lighter-hearted of a thing, you know, at least for some people. Father's Day, of course, coming up on Sunday. So happy Father's Day out there to our listeners that are dads, to our listeners that, you know, will be with their dads here this weekend, and then to our listeners who no longer have their fathers or grandfathers with them. Obviously, it could be a very challenging day in that regard. But, you know, look, I'll have an article on Sunday. I'll break down the card. But you know, I certainly encourage anybody that has the opportunity, go out and do something with your dad. Catch a minor league game. Go to the track. Play a round of golf. Go fishing. Something like that. You know, make sure that you take advantage of those opportunities while you've still got them. So I know I usually don't do that too much, get too emotional here at the beginning of the show. Sometimes I'll have my rants and things like that. But, you know, just a few things that have kind of been weighing on my mind a little bit here over the last couple of weeks with regards to, you know, some of the things happening in the news and then obviously with the foundation. So I apologize if it's an inconvenient thing for you there to take up some of your time talking about that, on today's show. We'll go ahead and get into our regular format here, and we'll start with a look beyond the box score. And let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers. They took 2 out of 3 from the Chicago Cubs here this week. The Brewers playing right with the Cubs for most of the season. They are just 3-8 in the 11 head-to-head meetings. You know, we saw Josh Hader human in that opener there in that extra innings loss, but he struck out the side in the finale as a bridge to Corey Knebel, and the Brewers wind up taking that finale game 1-0. And you know, when I look at the Milwaukee Brewers here, I mean, you know that I'm a big fan of this team. You know that I'm a big fan of what they've been doing. Their bullpen in this series against a very, very good Chicago Cubs lineup, 10 innings pitched, 15 strikeouts. And I think that when you look at the Milwaukee Brewers here, when you look at the composition of this team, when you look at the composition of this organization, I think they're worth a futures ticket. I really, truly do. You know, because when you look at the Major League Baseball playoffs, you get a lot of 4- and 5-inning starts. It is predicated on bullpens, bullpen depth, and if you've got some of those elite guys, well, that really helps. Josh Hader is an elite reliever. Corey Knebel last season was an elite reliever. He's working his way back, you know, to full strength from an injury that he suffered earlier on this year. But the Brewers have a good lineup. They have depth. They're a good defensive team. They've got starters that can get through the lineup 1 or 2 times because they focus so much on those contact management skills. And then you've got that elite bullpen. The Brewers are worth a futures ticket. Now, I don't know if they're going to win the NL Central or if they're going to have to play in that one game playoff for the wild card, but I think they're a team that is worth taking a look. Also, they've got some trade currency in the minor leagues. They've got some pitching prospects like a Brandon Woodruff, like a Corbin Burnes, like a Freddie Peralta. They've got some of those guys that they can look to move to shore up things on the major league side. And furthermore, one of the things I noticed here about this series, with Josh Hader working in the first game on Monday and then the series finale yesterday, maybe they're trying to build him up a little bit more to have a little bit more durability to come back a little bit quicker. Because this season, Josh Hader has only made 3 appearances with 1 day of rest, and 2 of them were in this series. So you know, maybe that's a message from Craig Counsell about the importance of these head-to-head games. Maybe it's a thing where, you know, you just happen to come into situations where using Josh Hader made a lot of sense. But there are a lot of skeptics out there about this team going up against the Cubs. We've seen the Cardinals kind of fall off the pace a little bit here this week. But, you know, they're up 1.5 games in the Central. They only have 8 head-to-head meetings left. The wild card is in play. I really do think the Brewers are worth a futures investment at this point in time. They were only 2-for-22 with a runner in scoring position in this series, still found a way to win it. Junior Guerra, Chase Anderson, Ulys Chastain, all at least 6 innings, 1 run allowed on 10 hits, walked 7, struck out 17. You know, and one of the things I talked about on one of our most recent shows, I think it was last Thursday, and I also touched on it on Monday, is that if you've got a top of the order that can create opportunities for you, you've got a good chance to win baseball games. And the thing that was missing from this Milwaukee team last year was that top of the order. They go out and get Lorenzo Cain, who has almost a .390 on base percentage. They go out and get Christian Yelich, who's starting to hit a little bit more for power over the last couple of years, a very good contact bat. It's elevated this Milwaukee lineup to a level that we haven't seen over the last few years. So I really, truly believe when you look at this team, when you look at its strengths, when you look at its weaknesses, they have the right type of profile to be a team that can go into the Major League Baseball playoffs and make some noise. So I do think at this point in time, and if you want to wait until the Cubs pass them in the standings, you can do that. But I do think that the Brewers are a team that you want to have a ticket on for your futures portfolio. The Cubs only had 6 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in the last 2 games. And the Brewers are a very good team when it comes to advanced scouting. And we saw the Indians really take this to the extreme in 2016 with pitch sequencing and location and, you know, kind of scripting the way that they wanted the bullpen to be set up. The Brewers can do these same things. They have embraced data in all of its forms. So once you get to the playoffs, this is a team that will know how far to push its starters, how to maximize its relievers, know how to get its hitters to be in the best possible positions to succeed. I like the Brewers long-term for a lot of different reasons, and the bullpen, of course, being the primary one among them. Another team here in the NL Central, one that has a lot less fanfare, the Cincinnati Reds. That was a good call from me there on the show on Monday. The Reds maybe got a little bit lucky in this series to sweep both games. They needed the Kelvin Herrera blown save in the first game on Tuesday night. Only 3 strikeouts and 14 in the third innings for Sal Romano and Tyler Mahle in this series, but the Royals didn't make a whole lot of quality contact. When they did, the Reds were there to make plays. That was one of the angles I talked about, is that, you know, for the Reds, with the extra hitter because of the DH, they'd be able to optimize their defense a little bit more. That kind of came to fruition here in this series as the Royals only scored 1 run. But something, a betting angle that kind of stood out about this one to me, and I saw this with the Toronto Blue Jays, and we talked about this on one of the previous shows. If you're a bad team, have a chance to win a game and suffer one of those crushing losses, generally speaking, a blown save, the next day can be a real problem. Again, Toronto did that. They committed 5 errors in the game immediately following a blown save that they had against I can't remember who it was now, but it was a couple of weeks ago. But they wound up having 5 errors in the next game. The Royals with 3 errors in the next game, they lose that game 7-1. I think there's a hangover effect for bad teams after those blown saves. So I do think that's a good betting angle that we want to look to try and take advantage of as we move forward here a little bit this season, is that, you know, if you're a team that's going to win 65 games and you squander the opportunity to do that with a blown save, there is a lasting hangover effect, I think, into the next day. So that'll be an angle that we want to look at there. But the Reds, you know, 19-23 in their last 42 games. Joey Votto getting a couple days off of his feet, DHing here in the American League Park. I like that Jim Riggleman did that. The White Sox, a team doing the same thing here. The Padres, another one where they're all playing much better after getting off the tough starts to the season. And again, that's important and something to keep in mind for next year, as we've previously discussed. Bad teams get written off. The Reds started 5-20 this year. You know, they're still not a good team. They're still close to 20 games under 500, but they're playing a lot better over their last 40 games. And you know, teams will do that. They'll level off once we get into the month of May. Then they'll fall apart late, whether it's an attrition thing from a depth standpoint, September call-ups, trades, all that type of stuff. But you know, in the dog days of the season in May and June, you know, those are teams that will kind of level off a little bit and play some pretty decent baseball. Seattle Mariners swept the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. None of the wins by 1 run, but they did have a walk-off on Wednesday night. Mariners now 20 games over 500, or 10 games over 500, depending on how you look at it. But, you know, I talk about Pythagorean win-loss. I talk about run differential, base runs, etc. But look, this is a good team. I don't want hate mail from the Mariners fans that are out there. Why do you hate my team? Why do you keep talking about going against my team? This is a good team. It's a legit offense. It's a very, very good bullpen. But, you know, they're doing so well in one-run games and doing very well in games that you generally have a little bit more of a toss-up type of feel to them, that it's very hard to sustain that. Now, if they're going to score 8 runs a game or 6 runs a game, whatever they had here in this series, yeah, it's a little bit easier to do that. But one of the things I want you to focus on, and this is, you know, we've talked about good bullpens, and when they're in games where they don't have to protect leads, you know, maybe having some kinks in the armor there, maybe not pitching very well. For the Mariners, when you look at their performance yesterday out of the bullpen, 3 runs allowed on 6 hits, and none of those were the primary relievers. No James Pezos, no Alex Colome, no Edwin Diaz. Obviously, Juan Nicasio and Dan Altavilla are both on the DL. But this is why you look at bullpen usage. This is why it's important to see how fresh and how available those relievers are. It didn't cost the Mariners the win as they walked this game off, but it did help the game over the total. So bullpen usage is very important because a lot of teams have pretty good primary relievers. The teams that don't are the teams that are bad. But when those primary relievers are not going to be used, those bullpens are going to struggle. Again, that's part of the reason why, you know, if you're not protecting a lead, you use some of the 6th and 7th men out of the bullpen, you know, maybe they're not going to be as good. So that is an angle that you want to look to consider with regards to bullpens is, you know, if the primary guys are not available or the manager may be trying to shy away from them, could be a tough spot for that team. Now, the Angels, Garrett Richards leaving that game hurt. They've already lost Shohei Ohtani. I think the Angels are a fade team right now. They're not a good offensive team. They're Mike Trout. Justin Upton's been pretty decent. Andrelton Simmons is now hurt. He's got an ankle injury. That'll hurt him at the plate and in the field. But this is not a great rotation at all, especially with the injuries that they have. This is not a great offense. The bullpen has been pretty good, but now the workload is about to get enhanced even more with some of the starting pitcher injuries. So the Angels, to me right now, are a fade team. I wish I would have picked up on this before Seattle, but it would have been hard for me to go on Seattle with what I know about their run differential and their Pythagorean win-loss and all that type of stuff. But, you know, the Angels are a team that I think I am looking to go against here in the near term. Diamondbacks took 2 out of 3 from the Pirates, and, you know, John Jay is a pretty good addition at the top of this Arizona batting order. A good on-base percentage guy. Doesn't make a ton of high-quality contact, but he's going to get on base. And, you know, what really stood out for me in this series is we saw 44 total runs down there in the humidor at Chase Field. The Pirates bullpen gave up 13 of the 26 runs that Arizona scored. And the Pirates have thin margins for error. The rotation is not very good. Ivan Nova's been hit hard. Chad Kuhl's been hit hard. Joe Musgrove has pitched well. We'll see how long he can sustain that. But the Pirates just don't have a great rotation. And now the bullpen's starting to show cracks. Felipe Vasquez is not right. He nearly blew that save yesterday for the Pirates. They scored 18 runs. So the offense is still kind of doing things for them, but you know the bullpen has some issues. The starting rotation has some issues. It's not a big surprise to see that the Pirates have faded the way that they have. One other team to mention here on today's show, that's the San Diego Padres, who are now just 4 games under .500. They pick up a series win over the St. Louis Cardinals. And you know, I've been wrong about the Cardinals. I thought it was a good time to buy on them, but apparently it's absolutely not. But I want to talk about the Padres and their improvements defensively. This is a big reason why the Padres have gotten so much better here of late is that in 2016, they were minus 27 defensive runs saved. That was 23rd in baseball. In 2017, they had 0 defensive runs saved, so they were exactly average. That was 17th. But in 2018, they have 31 defensive runs saved. They're the 4th best defensive team in baseball based on that metric, and that helps a guy like Tyson Ross. That helps a guy like Clayton Richard. For a little while, it helped a guy like Jordan Lyles until he remembered that he's not very good. But this is a Padres team right now that's playing some very good baseball because they're not allowing the opposition to score a whole lot of runs. They're doing a great job defensively. They've got a very strong bullpen. This is an interesting team to follow here. Now, I don't know how sustainable all of this is. And, of course, they're going to get lots of trade offers for Craig Stamen, Kirby Yates, and Brad Hand. Probably going to wind up moving at least one of those guys, I would think. But at the same time, you know, their bullpen is set up pretty nicely for 2019 and beyond. So maybe the Padres do stand pat. Maybe the Padres trade a couple of, you know, complementary pieces or maybe try to capitalize on a starting pitcher or something like that. But this is a team that, you know, just very impressive when they have leads, very impressive defensive team. The Padres are a team that we definitely need to reevaluate a little bit here as we move forward. All right, let's go ahead and give our exit velocity update. And I apologize. I feel like I'm a little bit out of it today, and maybe that's coming across on the program. But we'll do our exit velocity update here. Batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour. The league average last year, 558. The league average once again here this week, 517. It's the 5th time in 6 weeks that we've been at 517. So that looks like it's the new normal that we're going to see here this season. So I wouldn't expect it to go up or down too much from that on a week-to-week basis. Number one team in batting average on 95-plus batted balls is not the New York Yankees this week. It is the Los Angeles Dodgers at 564. First time it hasn't been the Yankees or the Diamondbacks, I think, since the start of the year. But it is the Los Angeles Dodgers who offensively have really gotten it going here of late. Yankees are number two, 555. Arizona Diamondbacks, 549. They're up 18 points here this week as their offense has gotten back on track. Hello, Paul Goldschmidt. Tampa Bay Rays at 540, Atlanta Braves 537. Toronto still the worst at 471. However, they're up 10 points from last week. So the losses that they saw 2 weeks ago, they've kind of gotten some of those back here with a quality performance offensively this week. Royals 476, Mets 479, Indians 489, Phillies 490. A lot of usual suspects down there in that department. All right, on exit velocities of 95-plus in the weighted on base average category, or WOBA, the league average in 2017 was 695. This week, we set a new career high at 635. 633 the last 2 weeks. So maybe the warmer weather having a little bit of a factor. Maybe the starting pitcher attrition with some injuries and some minor league call-ups. Maybe that's having a factor as well. Yankees still number one in this department, but they are down 8 points from last week. The Dodgers are number two at 715. They are up 29 points in WOBA from last week. They are clearly a buy team right now. Diamondbacks jumped up 27 points. They're at 691. Twins and Braves round out the top five at 660 and 654, respectively. The worst teams, the Royals, 563, they're down 17 points this week. They are 29 points lower than anybody else in baseball. So on one hand, you can look at this and say, okay, they're probably in line for some positive regression. And I would look for that against lefties. I think if you find the Royals at a juicy underdog price against the lefty, it's worth taking. But against righties, maybe not so much. And we talked about that a little bit in that series with the Reds. Only struck out three times in 14 and a third innings against the two starters, but didn't really do much offensively. Because from a contact quality standpoint, against righties, they just don't have any. So if they run into some lefties, they may be a team to back. Mets at 592, Blue Jays 595 as they're up 11 points. Marlins 600, Phillies 604. Four teams under 600 last week, only three teams this week. The Blue Jays kind of on an upswing. We'll see if the Mets can get this thing going as they get healthier. But the outliers are coming up a little bit towards the mean. All right, you've heard me talk about cluster luck on the show here. And I want to touch on this for a little bit here as we wrap up the Beyond the Box Score segment for this week. The league average WOBA, weighted on base average, with the bases empty is 309. The league average with men on base is 319. So with men on base, the league average is up 10 points from with the bases empty. And this makes a lot of sense because when you think about what happens when men are on base, you got pitchers pitching from the stretch, which a lot of guys are not as good or not as comfortable with doing that as they are from the windup. And also with men on base, the defensive alignment has to be different. You know, you can play that big overshift with nobody on base. When men are on base, you have to hold the runner at first, or you're playing at double play depth in the middle infield, or you know, your shift can't be as exaggerated because there's a runner on second, or you have to keep a guy close at third, something like that. So because the defensive alignment is different on the infield, we're almost always going to see the WOBA increase with men on base relative to with the bases empty. So this year, it's a 10-point difference. Last year, the bases empty was 318, men on base 325, so 7-point difference there. Same thing in 2016 with a 7-point difference, 315 empty, 322 with men on base. So the reason I bring this up is because you can find some offensive outliers that are in line for either some positive or some negative regression based on how they're performing in these particular splits. So if you subscribe to my notes, adam@bangthebook.com, I put this all together in a table for you, but I also did it for my own organizational purposes here on today's show to look at some teams that are some pretty significant outliers. Let's start with the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves on the season have a 300 WOBA with the bases empty. But with men on base, they have a 363 WOBA. So they are plus 63 points in weighted on base average with men on base. And again, the league average difference is 10 points. So the Atlanta Braves are really having some very, very good fortunes in those key plate appearances. And I think that's something that's in line for regression. I love the Braves. I love all the young talent this team has. I love how they look top to bottom in the organization. But they've gotten very, very fortunate with men on base. Now, the flip side of the coin here is that I believe they're 23rd in WOBA with the bases empty at 300. So with the bases empty, they really haven't kickstarted a whole lot of rallies. But when they have started those rallies, they've done a very, very good job with them. So regression will happen, but they should generate, as the season goes along, a lot more opportunities, which when you've got more opportunities, just by nature, you're going to cash in on more of them. So the Braves, you know, they are a team in line for some offensive regression. There's really no denying that. With an on-base men on-base WOBA of 363, that's just too high. You know, again, the league average this season is 319. So they are a very significant outlier. We talk about this. the big outliers will probably remain outliers, but the degree to which they will be outliers will come down. So the Braves probably will lead the league, but maybe they'll be in the 350 or the 345 range, something like that. So you know, that's one of those instances where I think the Braves have played over their heads a fair amount here this season. So I would look for some offensive regression from them as the year goes along. The Toronto Blue Jays are another one here, where the Toronto Blue Jays, with the bases empty, have a 291 weighted on base average, with men on base have a 340 weighted on base average. And this is one of those things where we're seeing with men on base, their hard velocity pay some more dividends, because this is a team that has been at or near the top of the league in average exit velocity throughout the course of the year, but they're not really doing a whole lot when the bases are empty. They're not giving themselves a whole lot of opportunities to score runs. And that's what you look at when you look at the WOBA with the bases empty. When you look at the bottom 10, Baltimore, Cincinnati, the White Sox, the Braves, the Tigers, the Phillies, the Blue Jays, the Mets, the Diamondbacks, the Marlins, and the Padres, a lot of teams there that aren't very good offensively because they don't create a lot of offensive opportunities for themselves. The Braves are very good offensively because they're an outlier in how well they're doing when they've got men on base. So that's why I'm going through here and looking for some of these teams and trying to pinpoint and isolate some of them. You know, the Pirates are another one, a 304 WOBA with the bases empty, 336 with men on base, significant outlier there. They've gotten very lucky, not lucky, but they've performed over expectations with men on base. As that regresses, what do we know about the Pirates? Well, their starting staff isn't great, and their bullpen has had some major problems here of late. So that's why we're kind of seeing the Pirates as a team that's already regressing, and I think there could be more of that as we go along. The Seattle Mariners are another team. Good offense. Very good offense. In the top half of the league, in weighted on base average, 312 with the bases empty, 342 with men on base. So this is a situation where maybe the Mariners do regress a little bit offensively here as we move forward, just because you know, they're overperforming with men on base, and they're about average with the bases empty. So this is that concept of cluster luck. And again, it's explained very well in Joe Pita's book, Trading Bases. But the Braves, Pirates, Mariners, three teams I would look for some offensive regression from as we go forward. Now, the flip side of this coin, obviously, would be teams that have not done very well when they've got men on base, and the Orioles and the Royals are poster children for this. Now, a lot of this has to do with the fact that these aren't very good lineups. There's just no talking your way around that. But the Orioles have a 304 WOBA with the bases empty and a 269 WOBA with people on base. That is the lowest in the league by 10 points. The Royals are next at 279. There's only one other team with a WOBA under 300 with men on base. That's the Miami Marlins, who are at 290. So the Orioles, while they're not creating a lot of opportunities, they're not cashing in on a lot of opportunities. They are the worst in the league at doing that. That's why they're 20 games under 500. That's how you become a very bad team, because you don't take advantage of the opportunities that you do create for yourself. That's how you wind up being that far out of the race before the middle of June. So Baltimore, you know, overall things may get a little bit better for them offensively. They'll start cashing in on some of these chances, but the problem is their pitching staff is so bad that it's up for debate how much it will actually help them. But a 35-point difference in WOBA with the bases empty and with men on base, they should turn that around. But again, I don't know what that means from an actionable information standpoint, because that's just such a bad baseball team. But the Royals are another one here. 35-point difference for them as well. They have a 314 WOBA with the bases empty, which is just outside the top 10, but a 279 WOBA with men on base. So the Royals are really just putting their tails between their legs when they get into some of those run-scoring situations, which is why I think at some point the Royals are a play-on team. They are a bad team. They will continue to be a bad team. But offensively, they should see some better fortunes here as we move forward. But again, a contact quality thing. You know, I've talked about that a lot with how they've been one of the worst teams on high-velocity performance, because they don't make a lot of high-quality contact. And they make a lot of it against the short side of the platoon against lefties. So when they're facing a righty 70% of the time, they're just not going to be a very good offensive team. We see that here, again, in line for some positive regression just naturally. But, you know, who knows when it'll actually show up. And the Angels, I told you they're a fade team to me. This is very interesting for them because with the bases empty, they have a 334 WOBA. Part of that has to do with pitching to Mike Trout because you're not going to do it as much with men on base. But they have a 306 WOBA with men on base, a 28-point difference. That would be the third largest if you consider the Royals and Orioles tied for first. So the Angels have really not had a lot of fortunes with men on base. And this is probably something that will continue because what will happen is when you've got men on base, you're going to pitch around Mike Trout. You're just going to do whatever you can to not let that guy beat you. The other guys in the Angels lineup really cannot beat you. So that's a big reason why I'm looking at the Angels as a team to fade here as we go forward. Even though this metric would suggest they're a team to back, I don't think so. I think this is skewed so much by the fact that Mike Trout is the best player on the planet, and it's not even close, that you know, you're going to see this big outlier because Trout doesn't get those chances with men on base because he's either pitched around or he's the only guy that gets on base. You know, Ian Kinsler's been hitting in front of Mike Trout. Ian Kinsler's having a terrible offensive season. So Trout's coming up with nobody on base. What do you do if you're the Angels? Can you move Trout down the order? Well, probably not, because then you're giving inferior hitters more plate appearances. At the same time, you know, you're asking guys who aren't very good to knock Mike Trout in, and they just can't do it. So the Angels are a big fade team to me. Again, even though this metric would suggest that they shouldn't be, I have no interest in backing the Angels right now. They are a team that I will look to go against. So again, adam@bangthebook.com. If you want that chart, then you have an idea of, you know, what I'm using to make these determinations, and you can apply some of that for yourself. All right, let's go down the lines here. Talk about some of these line moves that we've seen since Tuesday. Saw fade of Aaron Nola and the Philadelphia Phillies on Tuesday. That didn't work. That was John Gray and the Rockies in that one. Also a really bad beat on the total in that game. Saw some money come in against CC Sabathia and the Yankees. That was against Tanner Roark and the Washington Nationals. Just say they shouldn't be that big of a favorite against the Nationals kind of play, but they did wind up winning that one. Saw a big fade of Adam Plutko. That was against the White Sox. The Indians were just priced too high in that game, and they've been priced very high against the American League Central. Look, the Central is terrible. The Indians are going to win a lot of games in that division, but they are priced very high right now against some of these teams, and the White Sox have a pulse. You know, if they were playing the Royals, I'd be perfectly fine with laying big numbers, but the White Sox do have a bit of a pulse here. They've been playing much better over the last few weeks. So the market coming in against the Indians and Adam Plutko in that one. So a little bit of Clay Buchholz money come in against the Pirates. That was Trevor Williams in that one, and the Diamondbacks were successful there. Williams gave up 8 runs, only 3 were earned, but regression has hit him and has hit him hard. Wednesday, we saw Jacob DeGrom money come in on the Mets. That was against Mike Soroka and the Atlanta Braves, but the Mets just, they can't score runs. They are a very hard team to back right now in every context. Saw Chris Sale get bet into a bigger favorite against Baltimore. That makes a lot of sense. Chris Sale is very, very good. The Orioles are very, very bad. Saw Anaheim money come in on Wednesday. That money lost. Again, we're going to see a lot of this fade of the Mariners with that Pythagorean win-loss overlay, with their base runs overlay. I'm done stepping in front of them for right now, though. I can't see enough situations where I'm eager to go against that team. They will fall off at some point, and hopefully we can catch a piece of it. But for right now, you know, they're very, very hard to go against. That's a pretty good baseball team. Again, they have some outliers, but still, even with those outliers, excuse me, they'd be in the wild card hunt, you know, maybe kind of chasing down the Astros. So that's a very good baseball team. You know, I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression that, you know, I'm anti-Mariners or anything like that. It's just that there are some outliers that you do want to look to go against. It's just hard to do it right now. So Trevor Bauer bet into a bigger favorite against Dylan Covey and the White Sox. The Indians had 14 hits in that game, but only scored 2 runs. Real frustrating defeat for anybody that laid the big price there in that one. Cincinnati got bet into their biggest favorite role of the season on Wednesday as a minus 120 favorite, and they held serve as the favorite in that one. Then we saw big Garrett Cole money come in against the A's, the Astros, with an easy victory there in that one. All right, Thursday we got some Giants getaway day money. We're already recording as that game's going on. Seeing another big fade of Mike Clevinger and the Indians. That's Carlos Rodon and the White Sox in that one. Saw some money come in on the Braves and Aaron Sanchez. And my favorite play of the night, this is a rare 4% total for me. I think I'm better at sides. I like to play first 5 unders and things like that. To me, this is a total that I really, really love. The under in this matchup between the Braves and the Padres. Anibal Sanchez looks like a really big regression candidate, low BABIP, high left on base percentage, ugly home run rate, but he's induced a lot of weak contact here this year. he's gotten a lot of his contact outside the zone, and is getting swings and misses inside the zone. That's a great matchup against a Padres lineup that swings and misses a ton, particularly in the hitting zone. The Braves hit lefties really well, but they have trouble with righties, and Tyson Ross has been a very, very good righty this season. Two solid bullpens. I talked about this with the Braves just a minute ago. They are a big-time outlier in terms of cluster luck. That should come back to earth. The under in tonight's Braves-Padres game, a rare 4% play for me. I really, really like that one for tonight's action. Let's go ahead and preview the weekend here. A little bit of a shorter show. I'm just behind with the show today, and like I said, you know, I feel like I'm kind of out of it a little bit, so my apologies if this hasn't been one of our better programs. But looking ahead to the weekend here, the Red Sox and the Mariners. We got David Price, Felix Hernandez tonight, Rick Porcello, James Paxton tomorrow, Stephen Wright, Wade LeBlanc on Saturday, Eduardo Rodriguez, Mike Leake on Sunday. And you know, the obvious question here, can anything slow the Mariners down? They avoid Chris Sale in this series, but they do get four very different arms. You get a lefty in Price today, Porcello the right-hander tomorrow, knuckleballer on Saturday. Then you get a very good lefty in Eduardo Rodriguez on Sunday. Pretty good test for them here. And it's also a good test for this pitching staff. You know, Felix Hernandez kind of getting by. Will he be able to do it tonight against Boston? I don't know. Boston's hit righties very, very well this year. James Paxton should shut down Boston because Boston, very bad against lefties, and Paxton shuts a lot of people down. They get another lefty in Wade LeBlanc on Saturday. Then you get Mike Leake, who's been much better over the last 6 weeks. So, intriguing series. Lots of handicapping angles. I don't know how much interest I'll have in this series from a betting standpoint, but I will be writing about it over at bangthebook.com here this weekend. Giants and the Dodgers. I'm selling the Giants. I'm buying the Dodgers. You got Derek Holland and Ross Stripling on Friday. Madison Bumgarner, Alex Wood Saturday. Chris Stratton and to be determined on Sunday. Dodgers offense is white hot right now. I've talked about that already. They get Bumgarner still trying to find his command in that start tomorrow. A couple of bummer situations for the Dodgers. Walker Buehler getting hurt is a very disappointing thing. Walker Buehler, now it's not an arm injury, which is a good thing, but Walker Buehler has been phenomenal for the Dodgers here this season. Kenta Maeda came back last night, pitched pretty well, but they're still without Rich Hill and Clayton Kershaw. Lots of pitching attrition for the Dodgers, and yet they just kind of keep on keeping on. And they are a bye team right now in a lot of ways. One more series to hit on here, this one in the NL Central. Cubs and Cardinals. We've got John Lester, Michael Wacha on Friday. Kyle Hendricks, Carlos Martinez on Saturday. Jose Quintana, Jack Flaherty on Sunday Night Baseball. The Cardinals go to Philadelphia. That'll be Miles Mikolas and Nick Pivetta. The Cubs host the Dodgers, Kenta Maeda and Tyler Chatwood in that one. But we played this angle to success earlier on in the year. We'll look to do it again here on Monday with the Philadelphia Phillies. The St. Louis Cardinals are 4-10 in their last 14 games immediately following a series against the Cubs. They're going to fly out late for Philadelphia on Sunday night, so they're going to get in very early. I think the Phillies are a play for us on Monday, and you want to get in on this one on the overnight lines because Miles Mikolas is a guy that the market believes is in line for regression. We'll see a line move come in against him on Monday. So I would definitely play the Phillies on the overnight lines for that game. But as far as this series goes, Wacha's a regression candidate per the market. Hendricks is, you know, a guy who's just not having a whole lot of success so far this year. Carlos Martinez isn't either. Very interesting series. I'll be interested to see what the line movements look like in this one. But again, the big takeaway here is to play Philadelphia on Monday night with the Phillies taking on the Cardinals coming off of Sunday Night Baseball. Again, Adam at bangthebook.com. If you want my notes for the show, tons of stuff going on over at the website. Lots of great coverage, working on some new features for you as well. So that should be a whole lot of fun. And congratulations to our listeners out in New Jersey with legalized betting starting up here today. It's actually already started as I was trying to compile my notes for the show. So kudos to you guys. Enjoy that and good luck with everything out there in the Garden State. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the Bettor's Box.